This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show here on the Team 980. Nats opening week. We're broadcasting live on Thursday from Tap 99 in Navy Yard. Hopefully we'll see some of you there. Be a good time. Looking forward to that. Right now, though, before we get to some NFL mock drafting at 5:30, as we are 1 month from the NFL draft. I repeat,
ladies and gentlemen, I have an announcement. We are 1 month from the NFL draft. 1 month from the NFL draft.
But today we're talking Terps, because the Turtles are on their way to the Sweet 16 for the second time since 2003, first time since 2016. And a little earlier today, you know who I had to talk to about this. The one and only Kevin Sheehan. Was able to catch up with him before he left his studio after his show. And that is today's Not My Beat.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Kevin, happy Turtles this morning. How you feeling after that exhaustive game
so
last
awesome.
Night?
So great. You know, you don't get that many opportunities. I mean, I only love a couple of teams now as I've gotten older. And obviously, the run that the Skins had was incredible. But last night was, when that shot went in, like I was talking about it on radio today, it was thrilling. I mean, screaming at the top of my lungs. And at the same time, I was not expecting it, because everything, you know, not just this season, but over the years, usually it's a dagger the other way. And we've got a lot of scar tissue as Maryland fans to sort of, represent that. And there's also relief that they got out of the first weekend. Like, it was all these things coming together, but the shot itself was great. The game was actually a really good basketball game. Colorado State played really well. It was not Maryland's best game by a long shot. I'm just glad they got to move on and get, you know, a big-time matchup against Florida. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Of course, everyone can hear the game right here on the Team 980. We'll lead into it on Thursday. Pre-game will start at 7 o'clock. It's one of the night games out there in San Francisco. Let's work backwards. Let's start with the shot. Great job by the post game interview, being like, hey, you know, tell us what happened, take us inside the huddle. And Willard telling us, like, I just basically, like, who wants the ball? And apparently Queen was like, give it to me, paraphrase, radio friendly paraphrase. And I think that's great. It's a great story. It's very entertaining. If I'm a Maryland fan, I'm also like, what do you mean he had to tell you to give him the ball? He's so clearly the best player. What do you think about how all of that came together and kind of that final, let's call it 2.5-3 minute stretch where Queen didn't have any touches, and Colorado State's able to get rid of that 4-point lead that Maryland had?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is he is their best player, you know, but they have a lot of options. You know, they've had Rodney Rice hit a game winner at Indiana. They've had some other guys capable of, I actually thought the play was going to Gillespie. A lot of times the inbounder in a less than five situation is the guy they're going right back to. And once I saw Reese down screen, I knew that it wasn't going to Gillespie. But Kevin's such an interesting guy. He's got a great sense of humor, but it's typical sort of Jersey, very sarcastic. So a lot of the stuff that he talks about, sometimes I'm not sure if he's just exaggerating or being sarcastic, but apparently he did get in the huddle and say, who wants this? And Queen stepped up, and it's a good play that they ran for him, because that's where he's done most of his damage this year, is catching it in the middle of the floor, right around the free throw line. He's been uncheckable. He's really skilled as a big, and he can put it on the floor. It was still a high degree of difficulty shot because it was defended well. Him going to his left, he's done all year long, but it was defended so well. And then the angle on a bank shot got to that point where it's like there's only a little bit of room to be perfect. There's less margin for error. And he knocked it down. I loved it. I hated the defensive possession. You know, they played zone. They had a foul to give. Kevin apparently instructed to give it. They didn't do it for some reason. They let the best three-point shooter shoot an open three, which was so Maryland, if that's the way the season ended. But I love their calm in that they didn't take a timeout. They got the ball in, got it to half court in less than 3 seconds, and called their last timeout, which gave them the opportunity to run that. You know, a lot of people say, well, no, just go against a defense that isn't set. I liked what they did. I thought they were calm under pressure there. Not so much on the defensive end.
Yeah, Kevin Sheehan's with us talking about Maryland's win, of course, advancing them to the Sweet 16, first time in the Kevin Willard era, first time in a couple of eras, but they are off to the Sweet 16. Again, that game you'll hear on the Team 980 on Thursday against Florida. I haven't watched a ton of them this year because I'm just not a huge college basketball guy at this point in my life, and it's kind of funny to then parachute in on the tournament and have takes, but you parachute in, and I watch the game for 5 minutes, and I'm like, oh, I get the Derek Queen thing. He's awesome. He's so clearly the best player on the floor. And then to see him not get those touches, how do you think Willard balances that moving forward? As he obviously proved in that moment, like that could be a big breakthrough moment for him, but guards tend to also win in March. So as you look at this matchup against Florida, how do you think he manages that, however many games they have left going forward, knowing that you have watched all year and watched religiously with a high basketball?
Yeah, I think first of all, when you have that many options, you've got five guys that basically average double figures, and right, any one of the five can go for 20 on any night. That's a real luxury to have when you've got five dudes that, you know, on any given night, two or three of them can go for 18 plus. And they've done it all year long. They were in double figures, all five of them yesterday. The key moving forward, and I thought it was important yesterday, and they got through, they haven't rebounded well recently. They've gotten crushed on the defensive end, giving up too many offensive rebounds. Michigan had more offensive rebounds in the Big Ten semifinal game than Maryland had total rebounds in the game. Wow. So it's like, why is that happening? Well, a lot of them are threes and they're coming out long, and that just happens, you know, at every level. A lot of it is because they're switching one through five, so their bigs end up out on the perimeter. Some of it was they were in zone, and sometimes it's harder to rebound out of a zone, but they've got to rebound better against Florida. Florida's big, they're physical. And I think one of the things that's super important Thursday night is that their guards rebound. You know, they're going to be in position where their guards have to end up with four or five rebounds as well. If you give up second and third opportunities against Florida, it's probably a long night. But Craig, Maryland didn't play well yesterday. They didn't play well against Grand Canyon. They have played of their now, 27-8, 35 games. You know, there have been 12 or 13 nights where they've looked like the best team in America, starting five-wise, and have been unguardable because they've got five guys that can do it. They can go inside out. They can go outside in. They can take it off the glass and run. They can take it out of the net and run. They're great in transition. They're great in the half court. They defend in the half court. I don't think they've played anywhere near their best in these first two games. If they play at the level that they played at against Illinois in the Big Ten quarterfinal game, which was, and they blasted the Illini right from the jump. They can beat anybody left in this draw. They're good enough to do that. They've got the size. They've got the guard play. They do defend well enough. The rebounding thing is a concern in recent games. Now, can they do it for four more games? I don't know, but they're capable of winning Thursday night.
So let's underscore that real quick, and then I want to go back to another big story from this game. To you, like, what's the canary in the coal mine, if you will, for Maryland? What's the thing that if you're watching, you're going, they're on it today. We're good. We're in good shape. Is it the rebounding? Is it the three-point shooting? Is it who's taking shots? How the shots are coming? Like, what's the thing that you're looking for on Thursday night to say this is the best version of this Terrapins team?
That's a really good question because they've done it well in many different ways. Like, they've had nights where they've been unstoppable, where it's been all guard play. They've had nights against Illinois. I don't know how many threes they had. This was the regular season game at Illinois. They won by 21. Now, Illinois was missing their big guy, and Maryland just pounded them at the rim inside all night long. Reese had maybe the best game of his career, and he was unstoppable inside. So there's not an easy answer to that because some nights you come out and it's like the ball's moving well. It's going inside out and they're knocking down shots. Then other nights the ball's going inside and they're dominating, you know, with Queen and Reese on the inside. I think handling the ball, protecting the ball, not turning the ball over, sometimes that's a really good sign. Not that they've had a major turnover problem, but there have been a couple of games where they've been too casual with the ball offensively. And then I think some sort of physical presence defensively on the glass against a team like Florida. But they've done it in so many different ways, which is why they're dangerous.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. Kevin Sheehan with us talking Terps here on the Hoffman Show. Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're on YouTube too at the Team 980. Kevin, by the way, his show is going to start streaming on YouTube very soon, so make sure you are subscribed to the Team 980 on YouTube for that. See him and Denton daily if you so choose. It was funny watching the game last night, second screen style. I'm checking in on Twitter and all the other apps every once in a while and watching the dueling Twitter feeds of you and JP Finley, both of whom were talking about the refs. JP was ready to just like throw tomatoes at someone or hard rocks or something. You were much more of like, this game is not being well officiated. Maryland needs to adjust. College basketball officiating has been terrible as long as I can remember since I did care a lot more about it. What did you make of the officiating specifically in the game yesterday and how Maryland ultimately adjusted or didn't to it?
By the way, I think the officiating throughout the tournament so far has been horrendous.
It always is.
When you get the mix of referees not refereeing with their normal crew, plus every league officiates differently, and so you end up with, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. Maryland fans have a history of being referee complainers at the highest level. We had a major inferiority complex in the ACC for all those years because we weren't the Carolina school. We were the Yankee school up north. And even though Maryland basketball was a force in the ACC, we always felt shorted by a bad whistle at Duke, a bad whistle at Carolina. Now in the Big Ten for 11 years, Wisconsin, you get a terrible whistle at Wisconsin. It's like the place in the Big Ten. We've learned for whatever reason, referees succumb to the crowd in Madison. It's not Duke level, but it's pretty bad. I don't think officiating determined the game if Maryland lost last night, but they missed on an egregious, flagrant foul. I mean, Neek Clifford took an absolute shot elbow that could have really hurt Jordan Geronimo. And the fact that you've got an alternate referee whose job, part of it, is to let the referees on the floor know you got to come over and look at something. That's all they do all game long is that they're at the monitors in these games three, five, four, five times a game. And how that got missed, it was a big swing in the game too because I don't think he should have gotten a flagrant two because I think in the tournament you can't take the best player off the court unless he's swinging at somebody with punches.
Right.
I think in a regular season game, that would have been flagrant two possible, but it's a flagrant one. Maryland shooting two free throws and the ball in a 3-point or 5-point game. Instead, they go into the breakdown seven. So it was a big missed call. He also had an obvious hook and hold on a score.
Yep.
They were letting guys stay in the paint for 7-8 seconds at a time. Which, by the way, is 3 second calls don't get called at any level anymore. You know, just like traveling doesn't, palming doesn't. You don't get any of those calls at your at the NBA level or the college level. But I did not think it was a one-sided officiated game. I just thought it was a poorly officiated game. Maryland, Colorado State never got into the bonus. They had twice as many fouls called on them than Maryland did. They never shot a one-on-one free throw. In the game. That's unusual. But I did not, I thought that the flagrant miss was really brutal because those are the things that always get caught now in this day and age. And how part of it was that Maryland didn't react, you know?
Yeah.
If Geronimo had gotten up and was screaming, the dude swung an elbow at me, they go look at it. But Maryland's bench didn't see it from Geronimo and the alternate referee didn't pick up on it.
Yeah, no, I think that's the problem often with refereeing is you always feel like your team is getting screwed because all the ones that you miss, that missed at the behest of your team or at the detriment of your team, you yell about. And the ones that you get missed that help your team, you tend to not yell about. And then there's an uneven emotional response and you just feel like you're getting screwed. But Colorado State fans, I'm sure, aren't thrilled that the travel wasn't called on Queen on the game winner, which I think was borderline. I don't know that it actually was a travel. It was awkward in terms of the steps.
Yeah,
but a lot of folks think it was, and so, you know, evens out in the end. Wrapping up here with Kevin Sheehan, talking Terps on the Team 980. You want much more of Kevin's thoughts on this game and everything going on with Maryland, of course, you can check out the podcast from his show or his podcast. Two separate things. You can check out both of them. When you talk about the bigger program picture right now, though, Kevin, there's kind of this big cloud hanging over everything because of comments Kevin Willard made last week. He's apparently been offered an extension. He does not want to sign it yet because he wants more guarantees for the program. What do you make of that from both sides, from what Willard is asking for and how the university and the athletic department probably see these negotiations and those asks?
Yeah, I'm 100% behind Kevin Willard, and I really want him to stay. Maryland basketball has been a big deal for a long time to fans, to alums. It is a basketball-first school, just always has been. It's what's most important by far. But for a couple of administrations, athletic department wise, and even just school front office, it hasn't been treated that way inside the building, so to speak. And I think Kevin Willard took an opportunity to say, in a moment in which they finished second in the Big Ten, had 25 wins, they were a 4 seed, he was being sought after, and I think maybe still is, by Villanova, to say, hey, you know, from the outside, our fan base thinks we've got all of the advantages of all of the top tier programs, but we don't. And for whatever reason, for too long now, two consecutive coaches, even going back to Gary with Debbie Yao, you know, football, look, football's creating the revenue stream. We all understand that. They're in the Big Ten, which was supposed to be and has been a financial boon for the school and for the athletic department. But Maryland is one of those unique schools, Indiana, Kentucky. I'm not putting them on the level of Kentucky, but where basketball's always come first with the fans and students and alums. And that's for, you know, that's a product of being in the ACC, which was a basketball league much more than it was a football league. And they haven't had the internal support that the top tier programs have. I loved what Kevin did. It was certainly unusual. You know, most coaches would say, yeah, I appreciate the question. We're focused on Grand Canyon. But he took that opportunity to kind of show the athletic director the door. But I hope it ends up with him staying and him getting the kind of support that a big-time basketball program, perception-wise they are, should get.
Do you think that comment is directed more at the athletic director or at like the Kevin Planks and the super donors of the world?
No, it's much more of an administrative thing than it is. But Maryland has not produced at the NIL level with donor support like a lot of other schools have. And it's not from a lack of very wealthy, you know, grads. But for whatever reason, they haven't done that. It's not terrible. But I think rev share, the Big Ten rev share, is what they want perhaps a bigger chunk of, and maybe just more dedicated resources to basketball. Football is going to get the majority, in especially as a Big Ten school. But I think there are just things and maybe a level of support internally that he's looking for that he's probably surprised he didn't get from day one when people were telling him you're going to, you know, a big time basketball school.
Last thing to wrap it up then, if he can somehow pull this off and make an Elite Eight and or a Final Four run, if he wins two more, how much does that help his case? Or is this all, you know, moving deck chairs around, and, you know, the Maryland side has already made their decision on how much resources they will or won't give to Kevin Willard?
I think it's a fluid situation because the AD just left and there isn't a new AD. Mm. So you're dealing with the school president, you're dealing with the associate AD, et cetera. I think it was, you know, given that most people don't know what was going on and what he was really referring to, he really needed to win two games, you know, over the weekend. Yeah. It would not have looked good for him, even though I think a lot of us understand he's right, if they had lost to Colorado State yesterday and been bounced in the first weekend again. There was a real kind of deep breath, phew. You know, relief that they got out of this weekend. Gary was getting out of this weekend regularly. Like we were always expecting that the second weekend would be a minimum for, you know, a decade and a half. And the last 20 years have been tough. I mean, yesterday they were into the second weekend for the second time in 21 years. They've been in the tournament a lot. They've been in second round games a lot, but they've lost some brutal heartbreakers in the second round. I think winning those two were crucial. Not that Florida's icing on the cake, because they're there now. They got a chance. But I think it would have been, the whole thing perception-wise would have been tougher for him had they not won two this weekend.
Maryland, Florida, 7 o'clock pregame on Thursday. Kevin will be talking about it all week, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. here on the Team 980. Sheehan, appreciate you, sir. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it.
It's the Hoffman Show here on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Dave Johnson will join us as it's a Wizards game day coming up at 6. Talking football for the next half hour at the very least, though. Because today, Anthony, I do not know if you knew this. Actually, I do know that you know this because we talked about it before the show. But today is 1 month from the NFL draft.
Yes, sir.
Pew, 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 pew.
Is that 30 days or 31 days?
Oh, it's on the 24th, so I don't know, but it's like that's what people do when they say 1 month.
Yeah, that's fair.
So it's April 24th. You'll hear the draft, of course, right here on the Team 980. We'll have the Commanders pick sometime probably around midnight.
Oh, yeah, because I forget we are at the end of the first round.
Yeah, I just remember last year, being in Detroit waiting for the first round to end because there was all these rumblings that the Commanders might trade back in, and then getting the word that, like, nah, they're done. The guy that they wanted, I think it might have been Guyton, or whoever it was that they wanted to trade back up for, was gone, and so they were done for the night. And so Logan and I could do the live stream. That was a good time there at midnight at a Detroit airport hotel.
Yeah, that's a long time, man.
Yeah. So this year, I don't think I'm going to Green Bay. I don't feel the need to necessarily like I did last year. It's like, hey, they're going to pick second. They're going to pick Jaden Daniels. He's going to be there. I doubt that their pick at 29 is going to be at the draft this year, but we'll see. And there's all kinds of fun people at the draft. Like it's a great event. It's a good time. I would happily go if they want to send me because Lambeau Field is also a place I've never been. Have you ever been to Lambeau?
I have not been to Lambeau Field, but I have been to Wisconsin once.
I don't think I've been to Wisconsin. I've been to a lot of states. Wisconsin's not
actually
one of them.
Yeah, I've been to Beloit. Yep.
In where?
Beloit, Wisconsin.
All right, 15-second show detour. What the hell were you doing in Beloit, Wisconsin?
My best friend, his family is from Beloit, Wisconsin. He was born there. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So you went to Beloit, Wisconsin.
Yeah, he had a family reunion. Actually, no, it wasn't a family reunion. His grandmother had turned 90.
Oh!
Yeah, so I went out there for her birthday, so.
All right. Well, I love that. That's great. Beloit, yeah. Wisconsin. Didn't know it existed. Anthony's been there. All right. As for who the Commanders will take, whether that player will be up in Green Bay or not, definitely some interesting mock drafts starting to come out. And I actually did one. We're going to put it up on YouTube, Anthony, this morning. I mean, the live video is there if people want to go and rewind and find it. We called it the Internet's fastest mock draft because we try to pick every player in 30 seconds or less. Mm-hmm. We said, you know, hey, if you want a show with in-depth analysis of all these players, This Hoffman and Squares is not it. That's not me and Tony. We're here for jokes, entertainment value, but also some sports knowledge. That show's called Take Command. It's got a guy named Logan Paulson on it. But it was interesting to go through the exercise to see, like, there's going to be someone who drops. And I don't know whether it's one of the guys that I'm about to mention that could potentially be available for Washington at 29. The guy we wound up being able to get, we had Donovan Ezeraku drop, which feels insane. But we did. He wound up falling to us at 29. So we sprinted to the podium, and then I got him. And then I felt, I was like, all this goodwill that I built up for getting Donovan Ezeraku. You know, Walter Nolan was still on the board for the Eagles two picks later. And I think Tony actually wound up picking a corner for them. I think he wound up going a different route, but I think he took Siobhan Revell. But there's going to be good players available at the end of the first round, which I think is also encouraging for Washington because we feel really good about multiple guys getting there. Then the trade back scenario lives if we don't do what we did in this mock draft, which is I stuck Jackson Dart on the Pittsburgh Steelers at 21. But could there be the Giants, if they get shut out of the quarterbacks, especially at the top two, do they trade back in to the end of the first round? I think that's intriguing. Daniel Jeremiah just put out his mock draft 3.0, though, and he's got Azuray Thomas, who I think is an intriguing fit with Washington, the cornerback out of Florida State, Anthony. He feels very Dan Quinney. He's a super long corner, big size, not necessarily a burner speed-wise, if I'm remembering the profile correctly here. But he's definitely someone that I could see them taking and putting opposite of Marshon Lattimore and seeing what happens there in the defensive backfield. And by the way, he is young. He is only 20 years old coming out of this draft. So still a very, very raw prospect.
Nah, yeah, that's definitely super young. But I'm not going to lie, Craig, the more and more I think about it, like, I'm not going to say he's not a name that, you know, jumps off the page for me. But at the same token, when we talk about this draft and, you know, how a lot of these guys are just, you know, sort of kind of in the same ballpark when you talk about between 20 and 60, it just, to me, it just seems like, you know, the Commanders more than likely is going to end up trading back. And I feel like we're not going to end up having this first round draft pick. So what is your sense, or how do you feel as though, you know?
I feel like that is the optimal scenario because they need to recoup draft capital for this year would be great, but they're also down to five next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think getting more draft capital is great. Here's the problem. You have to have a willing trade partner, and I can't wait for them to take someone that someone doesn't like on the internet at 29, be like, how could they not trade at this? Or even someone that said they like at 29. But then some doofus is going to call the show and be like, I can't believe they took blah, blah, blah. They could have gotten him at 34 or 30. You got to have a willing trade partner. What if the Giants are like, we're willing to risk it, or we're not trading with Washington because they're in the division. We're not giving them, we know they want that draft capital. We know they're not going to take the guy. Because here's the thing, too, the quarterback spot, you have to, if you're Washington, have two people on the phone. You have to say, hey, New York, we also have Pittsburgh on the phone. Or we have Cleveland on the phone, whoever. I guess it's unlikely New York and Cleveland don't have quarterbacks. But I guess if they really don't like Shador and they say, Cleveland's going to take Cam Ward, Tennessee takes Cam Ward, Pittsburgh, too many teams. Tennessee takes Ward. At two, the Browns are like, we're going to take Abdul Carter. And then the Giants are looking at three, and they're like, we could take Shador, or we can just take Travis Hunter. And now we can use him opposite of Malik Nabers some, and he becomes a lockdown corner in a division with Terry McLaurin, CeeDee Lamb, and A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Like, that's not a bad draft plan.
Yeah, and the Browns also got a lot of picks too, though. So who's to say, you know, they take Travis, and then they end up trading back into the first, you know,
right.
To get their
quarterback. If you have Cleveland and New York on the phone,
yeah.
Okay, fine. But if it's just New York looking to get up in the end of the second round, they might look at the picks ahead of them and go, like, no one's going to take a quarterback. They're not taking one.
True.
No, the Chiefs are not taking one. Like, none of those teams are taking a quarterback. Buffalo, the Eagles, they're not taking a quarterback. So unless there's two teams looking to trade up, the chances are you can't trade back because you need a willing trade partner. Mm. And so, yes, in an ideal world, do the Commanders trade back as early into the second round as they possibly can? Yes. Is there also a chance that there's a player that, you know, like we wound up in our mock draft that we did on Take Command late last week. We had an offer for the Chargers. I can't remember who they traded up to take, but like there was someone that apparently Jim Harbaugh and the Pro Football Network mock draft loved. And that player went at 29, and we had to make a really tough decision of, is 55 in the second round too far back? But it was like, I think it was R29 and 128 for like 55, 104 this year, and then a second and a third next year. So we got the next year draft capital on top of this year draft capital, just swapping places. And so I don't remember the exact details, but it was something like that. And we had to make that decision of like, okay, when we sit there at 55, is there going to be someone on the board? And I think ironically enough, we passed on a corner and it might have been Thomas. I don't think that Azare Thomas was sitting there at 55. That feels way too late for him. But we wound up passing on a corner and then kind of having a little bit of regret. Like, we liked our draft, but Logan mm-hmm. loved this guard from Arizona that he was like, that's my guy. And I was like, okay, you're the GM. Click. But I think that's the thing is like, there's still, I think, folks who don't understand how football operates in the real world, which is that your ideals very rarely come to fruition. You know, we still get comments on free agency stuff that we did for the Commanders, or that we're talking about with the Commanders. They're like, I can't believe they didn't spend more of their cap money. And I'm like, on who, you buffoons? What player out there that they didn't sign do you think they should have? Because until you got a good answer for that, what, you just wanted him to spend money? You have to spend money on stuff. You can't just spend money on air or spend money in Magic Land and have good football players appear. So I think that's the problem, is like you can have these plans and you can hope, but you have to approach drafts not only in best case scenario where you have multiple trade offers and you get to take your pick, but in worst case of like, if the worst case is we pick hopefully a good between a couple of good football players that we in an ideal world could have gotten also four or five picks, 10 picks later, fine. You take the best one and you make your team the best that you possibly can.
Yeah. And to be honest, the more and more I think about, you know, the draft capital we had to give up for the Laremy Tunsils of the world and the fact, you know, there wasn't a lot in the free agent pool. It's just like, I'd rather, you know what I'm getting than overpay, you know, the top tackle in the free agency, Dan Moore, 20 M's. Like,
right.
I'd rather not do that. So I'm okay with the draft capital we gave up, considering the Pro Bowl caliber player we got in return. And, yeah, it's just that's what had to happen, kind
of. You have to make adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to look at the market and look at your situation. And I think that's what people get really wrong. This was the whole Connor Orr thing we did last week.
Yeah.
Right? People get obsessed with how you acquire players. And not that it doesn't matter, but if you obsess over the how, you miss the who, which is ultimately the most important. Because like the Seahawks, they got Russell Wilson, right? And they signed some dudes and went for some stuff. They signed freaking Percy Harvin.
Yep.
Dude helped win them a Super Bowl. Worked out. Percy Harvin was their Debo Samuel. Okay. Sick. So it's stuff like that where people get really obsessed with the wrong stuff that I think annoys me. But to your original question, like, would I love for them to trade back? Yeah. Is that my option A? Frankly, yeah. I think it is at this point. But I do feel pretty good that they, if that is on the table, they'll feel comfortable and confident doing it, because I think there's going to be high quality players available. All right, let's get you an update on some of the NCAA tournament stuff, and then we'll dive into some more of the mock drafts, because there was one NFL.com analyst that put out a 4-round mock, so we can take a look at a couple of different players on their way into Washington. But first, update on the NCAA tournament as we take a look at what's trending. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. The hell? Since I gave our What's Trending update on the Lady Terps, Anthony, in the last 3 minutes, Alabama's on a 13-2 run.
Good gracious.
So now Bama up 36-35 on Maryland. Let's go, Coach Freeze.
Let's go.
Let's get them going. Haven't you heard? The Terps winning the tournament now. Coach Willard did it yesterday.
Well, they always do it, though.
I know. Coach Freeze is, she's good at her job.
No, she really is.
Very, very good at her job. All right, talking more hoops with Dave Johnson coming up at 6 o'clock, Wizards game day. We'll check in how the youth movement is going in D.C. In just a few minutes, a couple games over the weekend. But taking a look at one more mock draft as we are a month out from the mock draft, or sorry, from the real draft. I mean, a month out from the mock draft, Anthony. No. We're a month out from the real dang thing.
Yes, sir.
This one is from Chad Reuter, who is one of the NFL.com's draft analysts. He did a 4-round mock, Anthony. 4 rounds.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it is. And that's 3 players for Washington, the way their picks currently align. This one would be a very interesting choice. So, first of all, I feel validated because the guard that we took at 55 whatever pick that we wound up trading for in our little mock draft the other day, Anthony, that Logan and I did, Jonah Savainia, the guard out of Arizona, he's got that dude going 28 to the Lions.
Oh, my gosh. And you said he was in the third?
No, we had him in the second.
Oh, the second.
And people were crushing us because we didn't take an edge. We didn't take a corner. It's like, how could you take a guard? And it's like, Logan's like, I love this guy. He moves. He's like 330. He moves. He's big. He's strong. So just saying. But because of that, you have a couple of guys falling that I didn't expect to be here necessarily. And two in particular. He has them in the first round taking Mike Green, the edge out of Marshall. And this 100% depends on stuff that we don't know about. His character questions are there. He finished at Marshall. He started at Virginia. Whatever the incident was that forced him to leave Virginia seems to be making a lot of teams uncomfortable. But on tape, he plays like a maniac. Pass rush juice is there. If they're okay with whatever the character off-field stuff is, and he's available at 29, you kind of take him no-brainer. But the two guys that he has going next are Nick Amanawori, the safety out of South Carolina, who's an absolutely maniacal athlete. Just best, like, raw athletic score, 1,000,000. And then Malachi Starks, who is this year's version of Brian Branch, Cooper DeJean, outstanding football player who doesn't look to have an NFL position and then will wind up being an all-pro at somewhere between nickel and safety in the NFL because you just wind up having one of the best defensive football players there and you figure out how to make him impactful. So I think that becomes an interesting question because I think that kind of piece in a Dan Quinn defense is really valuable. And I would love to replace Jeremy Chinn with Malachi Starks or, frankly, Nick Amanawori. But passing up on the edge would be really hard, even if I think the other two might actually be better players.
Yeah, that's tough, man. But again, like, who's the better player? And I think that's where Dan Quinn and Adam Peters made their money last year. Like, even with Johnny Newton, like, they said, oh, who's the best player available? And they end up, you know, drafting him as opposed to, you know, some of the other needs that we needed. So I think in a situation like that where you're torn kind of thing off of needs and, you know, BPA, then I think you lean towards the guy who's the best player available. And it sounds like it's Malachi Starks, and it wouldn't be, you know, a terrible, you know, acquisition. However, I do think despite the moves that they've made in free agency, bringing all these guys in, I still don't think that defensive line is – much different from last year's defensive line. So
it's a little better, not a lot better.
Yeah. So
unless Kinlaw is not good, which is possible that he's not great. But I mean, also then again, it's hard because people are like, oh, is Kinlaw as good as John Allen? I'm like, well, John Allen played like 5 games last year. So even if you like John Allen,
yeah,
that was a limiting factor. The other thing that you have to, I think, try to, if you got players that are like on an even plane, part of what you're doing then too is like, what can we get later? That's part of the positional thing. And the way this goes, like, there's some really interesting names left in the second round that they could potentially take. And so you have guys like Jack Sawyer, the edge out of Ohio State. You have, where'd he go? You have Siobhan Revelle, the corner out of East Carolina. You have Judkins, the running back out of Ohio State. Actually, both of Ohio State running backs. You have Jaden Higgins, who's a big receiver out of Iowa State, who's interesting. James Pierce Jr. Winds up going 60 here. The Commanders are at 61. Oh, so there's clearly some huge red flags with him that he is dropping like a lead balloon in these drafts. But they ultimately, in the second round, he's got him taking Darian Porter, long corner out of Iowa State. Mm. Super interesting prospect. Logan definitely is a fan of his. But also, a couple picks later, Oladejo, the edge from UCLA, who some people like him as a first-round edge. Like, he's got serious juice as a pass rusher. So, like, how does that affect your first-round pick? And then, just for kicks and giggles, see, and like this, he's got Elik Eyomanor going 105 in the fourth round to the Giants. That dude could be a first-rounder.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
It just shows you how much different there are, or how different the projections are for some people. He's got them at 128 taking Cody Simon, the linebacker from Ohio State. I'm not going to pretend like I have a file on him. But then, like, a couple picks later, he's got Bouyashaw Tootin, the running back out of Virginia Tech. That feels more likely to me.
That's round three?
It's round four.
A four.
He's got juice. Commanders currently, of course, don't have a pick in round three.
I don't know, man. The James Pierce one definitely is super surprising, just because before the college season, projected top 10 pick, and the fact he hasn't projected, you know, 60. Late second is a little concerning. So I don't know.
Definitely some, I think, character questions with him. I just don't know what they are.
I think he's the kind of player that falls to like the Eagles or the Cowboys, and
then you're mad about it.
Yeah, then you're angry. Because Jalen Carter, same situation. He dropped. Micah Parsons sort of kind of dropped.
Yeah.
So
they keep on coming. They are the mock drafts. I know Eric Edholm, who joined us last week, his new mock is coming out soon. I don't know that Logan and I are going to do another one this week, but probably will next week. And so we're working on some fun stuff for the show later, or Take Command later in the week. We'll do a mailbag tomorrow. So if you want your last chance of getting into mailbag questions, you can shoot an email to HoffmanShow@gmail.com or use the link at HoffmanShow.com, the contact link, or hit me on Instagram at Hoffman.sports, and Logan and I will answer some of those questions. And of course, we'll play some of it here on the show. When we get back here on the Team 980, your home, of course, for not only the Maryland Terrapins, you can listen to the men's basketball team's Sweet 16 matchup with Florida. Coverage starting 7 o'clock following our show on Thursday. But your Washington Wizards. So we'll talk to Dave Johnson next.